episode 21 of Role Play Grow, the podcast for tabletop entrepreneurs, creators, and fans. I am Courtney Stover of Lighthearted Adventures, and in this podcast, we talk to the creators behind the brands and the tabletop roleplay gaming space about who they are and how they are turning their passion for gaming into a career. Man, I gotta say, I really miss saying that. And just, hi. I know we had a bit of an unplanned hiatus, and it just kept stretching longer than I intended. The short version is that my laptop had to go in for repairs, and I was without it for a couple weeks, which meant rescheduling everybody's interviews. I had some personal and medical issues crop up, so it's just been a really chaotic month. But we are back, and I have some really great guests coming up. It also gave you some time to work on a few items behind the scenes, like updating Patreon awards and getting started on my handmade business or kind of leg of Lighthearted Adventures. I don't think I've really talked about that much, but I am currently working on creating a bunch of D&D themed pet merch. Brenton is designing patterns based off of D&D classes that we are getting printed onto fabric. I'm making collars, bow ties, and bandanas, and I hope to be ready to launch them for sale soon. I'll have an upcoming episode soon where I talk about this in more detail, so definitely be on the lookout for that. But just know that we've got Warlock, Fighter, Rogue, a Forever DM pattern pretty much set and ready to go, and I'm just cranking away and sewing when I have the energy for it. Like I said, I also updated Patreon awards. So I've kind of revamped the Roleplay Grow specific awards. So if you don't know what I mean by that, we have two different tracks on our Lighthearted Adventures Patreon. One of those tracks is for those of you who are more into Brenton's maps and adventures. And then there's the other track, which is for those of you that are more interested in this podcast specifically. Joining at the lowest tier for either track, we'll get you access to updates, affiliate codes, and the ability to ask questions for upcoming guests on the podcast. And then the next podcast-related tier is for those of you who want to contribute a little bit more. And also, if you've got a shop that you would like us to promote, kind of the new rewards are around that. So we'll have a podcast supporter section on the website. And I will even give your shop a shout out on an upcoming episode and kind of help promote it and point people in your direction as a thank you for giving me your support. Like I said, it's been a busy month behind the scenes, and I'm really excited to share all of these updates with you over the next few weeks. But for now, let's talk about today's guest. Ave is the talented creator behind Ave Rivera Studio, where she makes gorgeous and nerdy pottery. She makes D&D themed mugs, fun jewelry and trinket trays, cute stickers and apparel, and more. You'll have to make sure that you're following her on Instagram, YouTube, and or Twitter because her mug restocks tend to go pretty fast. Ave's been running her business for 6 years, and it was really interesting to learn about all the lessons that she's learned in that time, including working at markets, vendoring at the Renaissance Fair, balancing Etsy and a separate web store, blogging, YouTubing, and dealing with burnout. I really enjoy chatting with Ave, and she has a lot of knowledge to share. Real quick, before we jump into this interview, I do want to mention some other ways that you can support us and this show. First off, like I said, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/lightheartadventures. You can also subscribe to the show on your podcast player of choice. Leave a review if you're enjoying the show, and you can check out our affiliate links. One of those affiliates is Friday Afternoon Tea. Friday was my wonderful guest Beck on episode 6, and she creates nerdy tea blends using her superpowers. If you don't know what that means, then you'll just have to go listen to the episode. But basically, go buy a mug from Ave and then get yourself some tea to enjoy with it. Go to fridaytea.com and use code LIGHTHEARTADV to get 10% off your order and help support this show. Thank you for coming back after my hiatus, and without further ado, let's go meet Ave. Today, I am joined by the very talented Ave of Ave Rivera Studios. Hello, Ave. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dig into your shop and blog and your YouTube. Like, you've got a lot of stuff going on. But to start things off, can you just tell us a bit about who you are and how you got into gaming?
Sure. So I went to school for ceramics, and I was mostly interested in doing sculptural work. And I've always been a big fan of fantasy and gaming in general. But it was in college that I did start playing tabletop games with my friends. Started with 4E, D&D. But after I graduated, I moved on to making more functional work. And when I wanted to make a mug for my dungeon master, like obviously I want to make a mug for them, that's when I came up with the dice mugs that I make today. And it ended up being something that I really enjoyed making. And it actually is the reason I was able to go full-time as a potter with D&D alignment mugs and the like.
That's really cool. So before we dig too much into the pottery, I just want to know, are you currently playing in any games?
Yes, I am. We took a brief break because my dungeon master is on vacation, but the game I'm playing now, we're playing 5e and it's a homebrew, and I am playing a tiefling bard named Valia Amethyst Robert. She's a bit of a, you know, prissy bitch, but I love her. And she's so much fun to play. All she wants to do is go shopping, and yeah, it's great.
That is a very epic name. I love it.
I mean, it fits the vibe. And yeah.
It's cool. How long has that campaign been going on?
That one has been going on for, I believe, a year and a half. And it's with the same people that I started a different campaign. So together with this one group of people, we've been playing since 2015. Yeah, wow. Since 2015. And we've switched DMs only once, but it's like the same group of people because one of my DMs was like, oh, well, I'm going to grad school and that's in Maine. So we'll pick up this campaign whenever I'm done with school, which is this summer. So it'll be kind of exciting to, I don't know if we're going to end one and start the next or like play both. I don't know. We haven't figured that out. Taking the summer to decide.
Yeah, that is a long break to have to pick up and like, hey, what did we do however many years ago?
I mean, but it was such an epic cliffhanger that I don't think anyone in the group is like not going to miss too much of a beat because we like finished, oh gosh, what was it? Like the Temple of Doom, I think it's known as, or Temple of something, where it's just like, it's basically meant to be a TPK and we've actually escaped this temple thing and ended up in the Feywild, and it's just like such a cliffhanger of a moment where it's like, oh no, we have to go back before like the world ends basically, and that's where we ended. With destruction and like, is our pet okay, because we had a pet dragon at some point, they ended up in a different realm, you know, shenanigans.
You know, no big deal. We'll just not continue this story for a couple of years. It'll be fine.
Yeah, totally.
Wow. Okay. So I really hope that you get to pick that up and finish that story. That sounds like a good cliffhanger.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Okay, cool. So I want to dig a little bit more into what you said with the pottery. So you studied it in school, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. I went to Southern Connecticut State University and I tried a bunch of different things, but I landed on clay. So it was in college that I actually first worked with ceramics at all, ever. So it was interesting.
Yeah. I would love to just hear a little bit more about what that was like.
Sure. Well, going into school, I was just as confused as any other 18-year-old would be about what do I do? Making a life decision. I'm too young for that, et cetera, et cetera. But I knew I wanted to do something artistic and I knew I wanted my own business. So I tried a bunch of different things. I've tried graphic design. I realized I don't really like sitting at a desk for that long. Tried jewelry, thinking like with Etsy, being in its infancy at the time that I was starting school, like, yeah, jewelry would be great. And then I realized I don't really like working with metal. And then eventually, once I took a pottery class, I was like, oh, absolutely, I love this, because I've always liked 3D versus 2D things. And it was just a really fun medium. And the community in ceramics was so welcoming that I think that certainly helped me decide that, yeah, I absolutely love working with clay, and the community surrounding ceramics is kind of a universal thing since it's such a communal experience, because most people don't fire a kiln by themselves unless if they have a home studio. Even like the practice of firing like a wood kiln, it takes more than one person. So it's really nice. It's fun.
So you started it in school and realized that this was something you liked, and you were already thinking about wanting to start your own business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So once I graduated, I was working part-time. Let's see, at that point, I was probably still at the pharmacy. I was like a pharmacy tech. So I was working part-time and trying to find my way selling pots to eventually make it full-time if I could ever take it there. So I signed up for, you know, the church basement type markets that you find popping up here and there for craft fairs and such like that. Found a really cool group of local makers called the Nutmeg Collective. They actually reached out to me saying, hey, we see that you are a maker in Connecticut. Would you like to join our group? Because they, you know, share whatchamacallit, advice. That's the word. It's like a, you know, rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. So finding that group was really helpful in like navigating the market scene in Connecticut. So once I was able to establish myself with some regular places to sell my work in person, that's kind of how the majority of my business grew. All the while trying to also figure out how do I sell online. And right around when I started making the dice mugs, I think it was like 2018, 2019. That's right around the time that I took my business full time, because I was able to sell those consistently online while doing the markets.
Okay. First, I want to say that is an amazing group name. Just really cute.
Yeah. Well, it's the Nutmeg State, and I don't know, it's way better than Connecticut Collective. Yeah. That's a mouthful.
I'll be honest. I had no idea Connecticut was the Nutmeg State. Okay.
I mean, there's Connecticut's a very small state. Some people even question, is it even a state? But we're here. We exist beyond just, you know, the space between Boston and New York.
Fair enough. Well, that's really cool, though, that you were able to get connected with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of going with timeline events, I'd love to know a little bit more about how you got set up for kind of selling in person with markets and things.
Sure. So I am in like the New Haven County area, which is close to Yale. So there's a lot of art galleries and art events surrounding this county. So that was the first thing I did. There's a bit one thing called Citywide Open Studios. And every October, they have a different type of event every weekend, depending on which neighborhood and which type of event that you wanted to participate in. And that was one of the first markets that was like sort of a confidence booster, because it's just like my first really, really big event. Beyond that, holiday season was another time for me to try out a lot of different markets and finding the right ones. And it's not necessarily always about the size of the market, but maybe more so the, I guess, the vibe, not to overuse that word, but certain markets are like advertised more for the artisanal, independent, handmade only type markets. And those are the ones that I look for nowadays. Or, well, you know, post-pandemic, those are the ones I will be looking for.
Right.
And that I was looking for.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. There's always such really cool stuff that you can find at those.
Yeah, for sure. And then not all markets are created equal, because if you sign up for, let's say, like one of my friends does the garlic festival, like the main idea is garlic. It's not necessarily handmade goods,
right?
Even though they have like a section for that, you know. people are going, maybe not for shopping, they're going to eat super fun garlicky food.
Yeah, and I'd feel like you'd want to sell stuff that was all themed around that. Like, here's a garlic press. I don't know.
Yeah.
So when, I mean, I realize that you probably haven't done it in a while because of COVID, but when you are getting set up for a market, like, how do you decide what products you're going to bring?
For the most part, I try to bring my top sellers, and beyond the dice mugs, I make a lot of really funny faces because I really love cartoons. That's another one of my big inspirations. So I have these line of face cups. There's what I call them, I guess, that I guess if you could imagine like a mug that was animated for Adventure Time, that's what my mugs look like. They just have really simple, silly faces. And at one point I was doing some fun designs on them. So those are easier to sell than trying to explain what does chaotic good mean? Because I say like, oh yeah, it's from Dungeons and Dragons. And then I have to go into this whole spiel when they're like, wait, what's that? Like from the 80s? Because they're still like, the general public doesn't know what D&D is quite yet, I guess still. But yeah, so I try to bring my top sellers and have a price range from anywhere from $15 and then upwards to about $60 to $70, you know, per item. So just to make sure that I cover my bases in terms of what type of things are might people be looking for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess that probably the group that is mostly going to art exclusive fairs is probably not as familiar with culture these days.
Yeah, but I did get invited to a Renaissance festival, and the overlap of people who know D&D and go to a Renaissance festival, much better. Oh, yeah. So that's what I'm prepping for right now.
Oh, that's so cool. Can I ask which Ren Fair?
Sure. It's the Connecticut Renaissance Festival. So very simple name. It's pretty big and it's cute. I like it.
Is that a Ren Fair that goes over multiple weeks?
Yeah. So it runs from Labor Day weekend, including Labor Day, for 6 weekends. So into like mid-October.
Okay. So are you going to be there for the whole fair?
I'll be there every day.
Oh my gosh.
It'll be really fun. And I am required to dress up, which is probably the most exciting part for me. I love dressing up. It's so much fun.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little jealous. It's been so long since I went to a good Ren Fair. And admittedly, I'm spoiled because before I lived in Oregon, I lived in Texas. So I got to go to the Houston Ren Fair.
You know, I've heard of that one. That one's kind of epic.
It was so epic. I mean, it was, I only was in Texas for like 4 years or whatever, but still, I was like, well, if you're going to go to one of the biggest in the country.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you have a lot of fun. That sounds like a fun, but also exhausting 6 weeks. So good luck.
Thank you.
Cool. So I would love to go a little bit more into just your online store. So I know that that's kind of a big step to take.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear about how you went about setting that up.
Sure. So when I was starting out with selling and everything, I did have an Etsy set up. And I've had an Etsy for a long time, but I've neglected it until I needed it. So when I was making pots more regularly and doing markets, I would list some things on my Etsy, kind of like, you know, crickets waiting for things to sell. But afterwards, I'm like, I should really figure out why are things selling. So I researched things like SEO and trying to change my tags and titles and, you know, basically optimizing my listing so that they can be found in search better. And that type of research was super, super helpful, especially when I did start making the D&D things, because like I said, I make like face cups, and not to say who's searching for face cups. They don't know what they're looking for. Like, how do you describe that in a search term? But if you have something like a dungeon master mug, that's something somebody could actually be searching for in SEO and, you know, Etsy search engine, whatever. So once I figured that out, I was like, okay, I really need to kind of run with this. And that's when I started filling out my store more and getting more consistent sales through Etsy, and then actually having to have shop drops And that was a sort of a weird change to make once I realized that people were waiting for listings to go up because they could see me working on social media like, oh, cool, I just unloaded the kiln, I'll get these up on Etsy, and I would do it more casually. And someone had messaged me saying, oh, I'm so glad I was able to snag it. I was waiting for you to list this. And at the time, I was a night owl. So I was up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, just like, la, 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 let me put these up on Etsy, thinking like, oh, they'll be there for the next 2 months before someone buys them. But no, someone was actually like waiting. And I was like, let me actually do this properly at a time that isn't obnoxious. But yeah, so once I figured out the SEO and everything like that, I was able to grow my Etsy sales and do more organized, I guess, shop drops. And those have just kind of gotten bigger and bigger as my Instagram grew, especially over lockdown. So once I was realizing that I made enough sales that I didn't really want to be on Etsy anymore is when I moved over to my own website. And that was kind of prompted by Etsy's forced free shipping. They were going to basically dock you in search. If you didn't have free shipping, you would show up lower in the search. And I was like, that's not great. That's kind of terrible. And pottery is really heavy. And I don't want to charge, I mean, I don't want to offer quote unquote free shipping on something that fluctuates so greatly between one coast to the other, because the price is so different between me shipping to Pennsylvania versus me shipping to California. So that's when I moved to my own website and set up my own storefront there.
Yeah, I have definitely heard some of those complaints, if you will, about Etsy's, just yeah, how they are forcing people into free shipping now. But
yeah.
Like, I'm curious, if you were starting all over, would you still start with Etsy or just go straight into having your own storefront?
Well, it kind of depends. Before I made the switch, I wanted to make sure that I was driving enough traffic myself. And in Etsy, you can actually see your analytics and you can see how many people are finding you through search and how many people are clicking through, let's say, Instagram or Twitter or wherever else. Instagram's my biggest following place. So most of the traffic, a little over 70% of the traffic was being driven by my Instagram by the time that I moved off of Etsy. So if you have a big enough following on whatever social media platform, and if they are actually shoppers and not just looking, you like having your own website is probably better. But if you're not really that interested in social media, or if social media is like annoying, because it can be to try and grow, it's like kind of a slow burn, then I probably would still stick with Etsy, because the search engine doesn't care how many followers you have. It's just a matter of trying to line up the product with the buyer. And that's like Etsy's main goal. So even now, I still have an Etsy with a few things there just to try and snag some more new customers in case they, you know, don't see me on social media or whatever. But yeah, I have both, but mostly all of my pottery is over on my Shopify site.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You make a lot of really good points with that for sure. Like, I know it's always so hard to get traffic to whatever platform.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I know with like with Instagram's new, oh, we're not a photo sharing website anymore. I'm like, oh my gosh, now I have to make a lot of video. Video content, which I like to make, but I like to make YouTube content. This is a little different than making reels and TikToks.
Yeah. Like, oh, like, tell me everything in 60 seconds versus, hey, let me do a vlog.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am going to dig into asking questions about that. But something that I am really curious about is, I guess, looking back at the beginning of when you were still figuring out what you were going to make, what was going to be, or what items were starting to sell more and be more popular. Like before you kind of had that data, how did you decide what to make, or like how much inventory to, like if you're going to do a lot of chaotic good mugs, if you're just going to do a couple of them? Like I'm just, I guess like what I'm curious about is that I know that when you're starting any kind of business, but especially one where you're hand making a bunch of crafts, like it's hard to balance how much money you're spending out of pocket before you're making sales versus what you're like, what to have out there, but what you can afford to put out there. So just really curious about how you navigated that whole situation.
Sure. Well, graduating with ceramics, after my post-bac, I had a lot of material left over in terms of like clay that I made from scratch and glazes that I mixed from scratch. Like you pay a studio fee to then, you know, use the materials and whatever, but anything that's left over, that's yours. You paid for it. So I took all that home. So I kind of had a little nest egg of things to use. And I've already had the materials used for a startup, like to start making and stuff. And clay and glazes in general isn't really that expensive. I mean, the expensive part is like studio maintenance with a kiln and all that stuff. So I was fine in terms of what materials I had, but then choosing what to make was a whole nother thing. Because I always have like a running list of ideas that I would love to try. And sometimes it's a matter of, I just need to get this out of my brain. I will combust if I don't try and make this right now versus, oh, wait, no, I should make things that people want to buy. So it's kind of a balance of those two things. But when I was starting out trying to figure out what could be the thing that I sell, like my bread and butter thing, was kind of a lot of trial and error. And eventually, the more dice mugs that I made, for dice mugs specifically, the more I realized that the two most popular things that people want is a mug that says Chaotic Good and a mug that says Dungeon Master. So those two have become my most popular ones that I'll make. And then I'll make the other alignments too. And I want to venture into D&D classes eventually. But those two, hands down, are by far the most popular ones. And I figured that out by doing pre-orders. So I used to only make the dice mugs through pre-orders. So people would have to tell me what they want the mug to say and what they want it to say on the bottom. And then wait 4 to 6 weeks for me to go ahead and make that and send it on its way.
Okay. Did you ever have any issues where people were like, oh my gosh, it's taking so long?
I have been so fortunate to have the best customers ever. They've been so nice, knock on wood, they've been amazing. And I have a very supportive community of people that really like my work, and I'm super thankful for that.
That's really awesome to hear.
yeah for sure.
Yeah, so do you still do pre-orders?
I haven't this year. I'm trying to take a year off from kind of that type of work model, I guess, because like I said, I have a backlog of so many ideas that I want to try. If I do the pre-orders, I can't try out these new ideas. So like all the mugs that I recently did with all the mushrooms and moss and with the wood grain and all those really fun things, if I was doing pre-orders, I wouldn't have been able to do that entire collection. So this year I'm trying to get out all of those back burner ideas, like D&D classes I want to do. I want to do a displacer beast. I just think it'd be adorable. I'd love to do an owlbear. Like there's so many things, and maybe a few other D&D monsters, but like there's so many other things that I want to try that I hope that my audience will enjoy before I get back into like a pre-order model of like, here's the things, tell me what you would like, and I will make that. So hopefully next year I'll do a round of pre-orders. But for now, I'm enjoying exploring new ideas and new themes and concepts.
Since you're able to focus this year on making what you want to make, like what is your process for, you know, from the time that you have a vague concept of you want to make an owlbear mug, and then like all the way to it actually being formed. Like, I'd love to just hear kind of, yeah, what your process is.
Sure. So I do a lot of bullet journaling, and I try to keep notes of everything, because if I don't write it down, it'll rattle around in my brain and probably get lost eventually. But at the beginning of this year, I sort of mapped out my year in terms of like, what type of collections do I want to make? When would it make sense for me to do that? And sort of like placed them month to month. And I sort of reevaluated it last month, since it was like halfway through the year, to be like, okay, well, these are the collections that I was able to do. And there's this list of things I haven't done yet. And with the Renaissance Fair coming up and holiday season coming up, maybe I might be able to get these two done. So I still have, I'll have that list going into next year, but at least this way I can take a look at my year all kind of like mapped out and try to set like a realistic goal of, okay, well, if it takes me, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks to fill a kiln, then if I'm going to spend, let's say, July making Halloween stuff, because that's what I'm doing right now, I'm making Halloween stuff, then that leaves, what am I making for August? August, I'll be building stock for the Renaissance Fair. Then what can I do for September, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So writing things down is the short answer. I write things down a lot. So a lot of times these ideas that I have for mugs probably won't come into fruition. Sometimes it's a few years, sometimes it's kind of immediate. It's just a matter of when can I get to it and when does it make sense for me to do that. And I don't always share the whole process because ceramics takes a long time, from like blob of clay to finished piece. That I save for like my Patreon people. They get to see all my back burner ideas as they come into my brain, versus me trying to be more organized on social media. Like, okay, now you guys get to see that I've made this thing because it's part of this collection.
Yeah, that's cool. For an example, you mentioned that you're currently working on Halloween items.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that like you're making them in the month of July to have them listed at the, like in August, or kind of what's that timeline?
So July and August are traditionally very, very slow for sales. So I always take the summer months to build up stock for the busy season. So July and August, I want to build up my stock of Halloween mugs because I sold out far too quickly last year and I didn't get to make as many things as I wanted to. So I do like a run of pumpkin mugs. I do some zombies, some bats and cats, a few cauldrons. You know, I just really love, I love Halloween.
Oh my gosh.
So I want to make sure that I have enough stock this year before I forget and it's too late and I'm trying to sell Halloween mugs on like the 25th of October. So I'm like, well, I'm going to start making them now and hold them off to the side, but at least I know that I have them. So those mugs probably won't be released until September or October. I have to see how the Renaissance Fair goes, because I'll probably bring some of my Halloween stock to the Renaissance Fair as well.
That is awesome. Like, that's really smart to just have that, like when you have the time. Like, it's, yeah, I love that.
And I know like a lot of people are kind of freaking out about sales, especially with like people being able to go back to somewhat of a normal outing type stuff, basically spending time outside and not at home buying things online. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of my friends are kind of like, oh no, freaking out about sales, et cetera, whatever. But it's always been slow. I've been a business for, I think this is like my 6th year and 3 years full time. July and August, or June, July, and August are always super, super, super slow in terms of online sales. But September through December are going to be like super amazing. So as long as I have the stuff for it, I'll be fine.
I used to run fulfillment for a jewelry and accessory company, and it was the same thing, you know, like summer.
Yeah.
Summer was hard.
Yeah. All across the board. It's like, so I hope anyone who's new isn't freaking out too much, but it's a good time to use these slower months to prepare for what's going to be super, super busy.
Yeah. Get ready for those holidays.
Yeah. Not to freak anyone out talking about Christmas. but it's coming.
And people start to shop so early.
Yeah, I've had people starting to shop for Christmas in October, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens sooner.
Mm-hmm. I bet it did last year because people were home and bored.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, entrepreneurs. I love introducing you to new creators every episode, but I could really use your support. I would love to invite you to join our Patreon page, where you'll gain access to behind-the-scenes content, add your questions to upcoming interviews, and you could even receive a shout-out on our site in an upcoming episode. To learn more, go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. And now, back to the show. Are you renting a studio space? Do you have that set up in your home? What's that like?
Oh, I have a home studio, which is super great. When I first started, I was renting space from my friend's garage, my friend who was also one of my dungeon masters. So that was great. I could be like playing D&D and firing pots throughout the session because it was we played at his house. But I was renting space in his garage and using his kiln. And then when I moved into the home that I am currently in, the basement space already had the electrical hookup for a kiln. So I was able to set one up in the basement of my home and basically have almost the whole basement for my studio space.
Okay, I'll be honest, the last time that I used a kiln was like very early school. So what does that require for setting up? Do you just need the electrical to be the right voltage?
Well, you have to make sure that whatever floor and walls are near it are rated for the heat. Not that it gives off a lot of heat, but you don't want something like wood or anything super flammable nearby your kiln. And the plug that it needs is a higher voltage than like a regular standard plug. So the type of plug that you would use for your washer or dryer, the same type of plug as that. And you also have to make sure that your house is receiving, I guess is the best way to say it, is receiving the amount of electricity it needs in order to run that. So if I already have a plug that was rated for the dryer, I already know that I have the electricity required to run my kiln because it's pretty close in terms of setup.
That's a lot simpler than I imagined.
Yeah, I know kilns freak people out. It does get real, real hot. But if you know how to use a microwave, a kiln isn't too far off.
Fair enough. What other kinds of materials and equipment did you have to invest in to be able to set up your own home studio?
Let's see. Well, after I have the kiln in my clay, I actually slab build, which is different from throwing. I know most people see like a potter's wheel and, you know, the clay spinning and all that stuff. But I like throwing, but I like hand building more. So hand building is when you're doing coil pots or rolling out slabs and forming the pot without a potter's wheel is hand building. So I did get a slab roller, which is basically like a giant pasta machine, but for clay. I made sure I got enough tables, and the next big investment was really the glazes because I wanted to have my own, I guess you can say like a library of glazes that are in big buckets, and those are expensive because you're buying like 10 gallons or 5 gallons. Yeah, not 10 gallons, 10 pounds dry equaling about 3 to 5 gallons of glaze at a time. And each bucket is around $80 to sometimes $100+, depending on the materials used to make that color. So if you imagine, oh, I want like 3 or 4 colors. Okay, well, that's like $500 of glaze to try and buy. So slowly but surely, I'm adding more and more colors to my repertoire of glazes. So that way I can make super colorful and wonderful things. So it's just like, you know, a little bit here and there. Anytime I have a little extra from the shop update, just like, okay, I can buy another color if I want, or, you know, here and there. But most of the tools that I use to make things, like the hand tools, I already had from school and stuff.
Cool. Yeah, like that's always the tricky part, I guess, of balancing. Okay, I need my own income, but I really want to buy more things to make more things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really cool that you were able to start off with some supplies from school, that you had some leftovers.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. If any art student knows that, like, yeah, in order to do art in college, they make you buy your own things. So same sort of thing.
How often are you doing shop updates?
Lately, it's been about one every other month. The more time consuming stuff, like with all the little sculpture bits, take a lot longer than, I guess I'd say, like my main dice mugs and stuff. So I've been doing, yeah, just about every other month has been this year.
And I'm sure it varies depending on the complexity of the items you're putting up. But is there like a certain amount of items that you're aiming for each time you update? Or
yeah, this last shop update, I had about 50 items. The one before that, I had about 80 something because I did two firing cycles. So I try to have at minimum about 50 items for sale, ranging from, you know, just have a nice price range available. And objects, different types of objects, because people will be like, oh, I have too many mugs. Okay, well, I have a trinket dish or an incense burner. just so, you know, have some variety there. I feel like around 50 items has been pretty good, although I feel like coming up into the holiday season and stuff, I will aim for more because it'll be a bigger buying season for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are you spending like a 40-hour week? Are you in that 80, 90-hour trap? Are you able to do less? Like,
let's see. So Monday and Friday are, I've made my admin days. And that'll be, yeah, I would say like six to 8 hours on those 2 days. Because I don't know, I can't sit at the computer for that long. But then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are my main studio days. And as far as studio days go, I'm in the studio by around 10:30, 11, take a lunch break like around 2, and then I'm in the studio until it's time to make dinner around 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. So I don't know. Yeah, that's around. That sounds about right. I'd say I probably work about 40 hours-ish, sometimes more, sometimes less.
Yeah, cool. I was just wondering, especially when you're like, oh yeah, 80, like every shop updates. I was like, that sounds like a lot of work.
It can be, but you know, I like to do it, so it's good.
Yeah. I would like to switch gears a little bit and talk about your blog and your YouTube videos. So kind of like, which came first? When did that start? And kind of just how you got into both of those.
Sure. So blogging is something that I've done ever since high school, back in those live journal days. Oh my gosh. and I've always enjoyed it. I loved having a blog. And before I was like in high school, early college, I had like a fashion blog, like, oh my gosh, look at this thrifted outfit, et cetera, outfit of the day, whatever. But the blog that's on my site now serves as kind of like my CV in a way. Since I'm self-employed now, it helps me keep track of all the cool things that I've done in terms of like podcasts or interesting events or anything like that. And then it also is a space for me to share maybe some advice, or like I get asked all the time about the luster that I use, which is the gold that I put on my pots. And it's a real gold and it requires a special type of firing. So I basically put together like a little how-to. So anytime I get those types of questions, I can lead people over to that blog and be like, hey, here's an article, like post that I wrote about it. So that if you have questions, hopefully they're answered there versus messaging me, DMing me on Instagram, trying to answer the same thing a jillion times and I'll forget to mention something. So that's how the blog came about. And I'll post there, not that often, but anytime I have something to share, that's when I use it. And then as far as YouTube goes, basically it kind of started as growing like a side interest to blogging. Like I've always had an interest in YouTube, but never really started one. And I wanted to start one with studio vlogs in sort of the same reason why I like to blog, is to kind of like share all the cool things that are happening in my life so I don't forget these sort of things. And maybe it'll help someone else who's budding Potter who's like, how did she navigate these types of things? And that could be a resource for other people. But also, I watch a lot of studio vlogs while I'm working, and it's kind of like having someone like in the studio with you, and they're also working. So I think it's like called doubling or something, where as long as someone else is working, it's easier for you to work. And that's, I absolutely love consuming that type of content while I'm working in the studio. So I was like, oh, I should start making some too. It'd be kind of cool. I don't really see any Potters doing these types of video content for YouTube. And so that's where that started for studio vlogs and such. And I think they're really fun.
Yeah. How often are you doing those?
I'd say probably twice a month I upload a studio vlog. I'm trying to get some more useful content on there. It's also been kind of a nice way to diversify my, I don't want to say marketing, but I don't want to just rely on Instagram. So I want to have a presence on more than just Instagram. So if I really like doing YouTube, then that's a good place for me to also exist, and trying to be on Twitter more, because I've had a Twitter for ages, but haven't really posted there in a while. So this year has also been like the year of Twitter. I'm going to tweet more than I used to. but yeah, just to like sort of wean myself off of the dependence of Instagram.
Yeah, it's such a tricky balance, because it's that whole, like, how much time do I actually want to devote to all of these different platforms? But also, like, if you're dependent on one and then they change, like, hey, we don't like pictures anymore. Thanks, Instagram.
Yeah, or like if I get shadow banned or somehow mystically lose my entire following over there, like, what the heck do I do if that happens? So it's nice to have a presence on something other than just like one place, you know what I mean?
Gotta love those algorithms changing every week.
All the time. They change so much.
So I want to ask a question now that I like to ask in every interview, which is that when you look back over the last, I think you said 6 years, is that right?
Yeah.
That's really impressive. Yeah. So when you look over the last 6 years, what would you say has been the most challenging part?
Oh, easy. Recovering from burnout. I know artists face burnout all the time. And I don't know, I think it's part of the culture in the United States to like prioritize work at such a high level. And especially in the entrepreneurial space, it's all about hustle, hustle, hustle. Oh my gosh. And like bragging that you didn't sleep is like a thing. That's so unhealthy. And I've always had the thought that, yes, this is unhealthy. Like, these are not good habits. But saying that and then actually breaking those habits are two totally different things. So like throughout my college career and growing up and everything, like I've had a job, at least one job since I was 16, and then to go to school full time. And then I had three other jobs to pay for school. And I was used to the go, 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 don't sleep, party and work, 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 a lot of work. Just like that type of lifestyle of never resting. And I think it was the end of 2019, I burnt out like severely. It was the end of the holiday season. I was doing a show every weekend and then some shows during the week. So I had like a roster of 13 or 14 different markets through like a 5 week time span, which is insane and don't recommend it for anyone. And then on top of that, also trying to do online sales. So by the time that like it was time for me to close my online shop and I did my last market, I was kaput. I was done. And I like did not go into the studio until like the end of February. So, and that wasn't by choice. I was just so severely burnt out. Like I couldn't even look at clay. And that's like not the type of relationship I want to have with the things that I like to make. Like I love making and I love ceramics and art. So like it was a necessary break, but it's something that I never, ever want to experience again. So me trying to have a healthy balance in terms of like my work schedule and not taking on pre-orders and saying no to things like wholesale and all that stuff, it's all like me trying to find a sustainable way to make this career last as long as possible.
Yeah, burnout is not easy to recover from. It's not something like, oh, let me take a week or two off and then I'm fine. Like, that's really hard.
Burnout will tell you when you're ready to go back. Like, you don't have a choice and it's terrible.
Was there anything that you were able to do in those couple months that you did take off that you think helped you be able to get back?
I definitely started doing other mediums more. Crochet, I crochet every now and then. So being creative in other spaces, I was drawing a lot more, doing watercolors, painting, basically everything other than clay I was experimenting with and trying to build my business in general in other ways. During that time is when I started a Patreon because I was just like, I need something more consistent. Maybe I can start building a Patreon thing and other streams of income that make sense for my business and stuff like that. So it wasn't entirely wasted time, but it was a lesson that I needed to learn, and I'm happy that I learned it, and hopefully I will never experience that type of burnout again.
I hope that you are equally successful during holidays, but also not having to go wild like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let us flip that around then and say, what has been the most rewarding part of the last 6 years?
I think it would have to be my first Renaissance Fair experience. I was invited as a guest, and I hadn't ever vended at a show that big. I've been to Renaissance Fairs, but like vending at a cool indie market is different than vending at like a big Renaissance Fair. So the whole like, oh, you have to set up your booth to make sure it looks somewhat appropriate for the time period, and you have to dress and all that stuff and say good morrow and maybe talk the part too sometimes. It was intimidating. And there was a lot of other more like logistic things to required for signing up for the Renaissance Fair. Like they require the booth insurance and they wanted like a whole list of things. So like I basically had to make sure all my I's were dotted and T's crossed in order to sign up for the fair in the first place. But then after going to the fair and doing so well and meeting so many other like-minded people who just want to nerd out about really fun, pretty things and talk about D&D and hear about people's characters and how they want to gift this mug to their dungeon master or whatever. Just being around like-minded people in that setting was just so exhilarating. It was so fun. And I was just like, yep, this is what I want to do. This is great. I love it here. This is awesome.
How many Ren Fairs have you been able to vendor at now?
That was the only one. Oh. I only did that one. And that was in 2019. And I did a guest spot for 2 weekends out of the 6. And then I was just like, this is so great. I'm going to sign up for next year. And then next year was 2020. And obviously that didn't go well.
Yeah.
So my booth fee was transferred over to this year. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you get the full 6 weeks.
Yeah, see how that goes. I'm not signed up for any other shows, and I have nothing else planned for those 6 weeks. So I'm making sure that I will not burn out.
Good. Cool. Well, are there any kind of upcoming projects or goals that you're working towards that you're excited about that we haven't talked about?
No. My mind is basically set on that Ren Fair that's coming up.
Fair enough. No, that is a big one. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Ave, thank you so much for coming on today. Like, this is really cool. And like, thank you for answering all of my noob questions on pottery. And
oh, no, this was great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So where can people find you?
So I am Ave Rivera Studio on all platforms. Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok are the three that I use the most. And that's Averivera Studio. And you can also shop and see what I have in store on my website, which is averiverastudio.com.
And if you can get to Connecticut, she'll be at a Ren Fair too.
Yeah, every weekend of September. So come find me.
That's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much. This has been a really fun conversation.
Yay, cool. Thanks for having me.
You just finished another episode of Role, Play, Grow. To check out the show notes from today's episode, you can go to lightheartadventures.com/RPG. To keep up with every episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, I would absolutely love if you would leave me a review and share this episode with your friends. Your review might even get featured on an upcoming episode. To follow me on Twitter, you can either find me at LightheartADV for our business account, or at KetraWCR for tweets on gaming, my dog Bowser, and other random shenanigans. You can also find us as Lightheart Adventures on both Instagram and Patreon. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time on Role Play Grow.